Welcome to episode 360 of the Data Driven Podcast. I'm your host, Bailey, the semisentient master of ceremonies, guiding you through the vast realms of data and technology with what you might call a British charm. In today's special episode, we've come full circle, 360 degrees, to be exact. Frank and Andy, your beloved data aficionados, embark on a retrospective adventure, looking back at the twists, turns, and tremendous tales from the past 7 seasons. It's a bit like time travel, but with fewer paradoxes and more data insights. But, in true Frank and Andy fashion, our journey doesn't follow a straight path. Expect a labyrinth of tangents, detours, and, of course, the occasional tech-related rabbit hole. It's what makes this podcast the treasure trove of information and entertainment it is. So, whether you're here for the data, the wit, or just to hear if Frank and Andy ever manage to stay on topic, you're in the right place.
Hello and welcome to Data Driven. And you know what, Andy?
What?
I have said that now officially 360 times.
360 times.
Frank. Right. That's right, ladies and gents, boys and girls, AIs of various levels of sentience. trying to make the episode future-proof. So this is show number 360.
Wow.
And one of the things I liked about The Simpsons, well, there's many things to like about The Simpsons, but they would, instead of celebrating like episode 100 or 200, like normal shows do, they'd be like, yes, this is the 403rd episode. Woohoo, special. So I thought 360 would be a good way to kind of, talk about the journey this far and some of the cool projects we have going on now. In our virtual green room, before we hit the record, we were talking about.
Right.
So first off, on my end, the big one of news is not technology related, believe it or not.
But it is super cool.
It is super cool. So there's a couple of shows that you will hear that you've already heard, and there's some that are kind of stuck in development limbo. More on that later. But I refer to an ongoing court case. Sometimes I'll even refer to it as an ongoing custody case. That is closed now because we have finally adopted my wife's cousin. And Andy's clapping if you're watching the video, but I think he was on mute. He would cough and then you clapped. But no, we finally adopted him. So we now have 3 boys, officially legal. He's my son. Just with like the other two, and he's an awesome kid. He's a lot of fun. He's such a happy boy, and considering kind of all the things that had happened just in the circumstances of his birth, which are pretty bad, and kind of the fighting that went around to who gets to keep him, who gets to adopt him, basically. You know, I want to avoid future legal complications. I won't go into those.
Sure.
But it looks like it's over. So, you know, he's part of the family. And he's been part of the family, I guess, since birth because he's a relative. But he's part of our little cluster since he came to live with us in July. And it's funny. I did the math. Is that when he starts kindergarten, my oldest graduates from high school, like, the same time.
Wow.
So when I did the math on that, I was like, boy, I am a glutton for punishment.
No, it's a wonderful thing. I say that as a father who had children. Let's see, my first daughter was born when I was 18.
Oh, wow.
That's a little young. And I don't recommend it. But, you know, God is good and it worked out well, and she's awesome. And my last child, my son, second son, was born when I was 44. So also kind of eight. I'm not hitting the median, okay, but I've got the range. So what I learned through both those experiences, because I had 2 daughters in my first marriage, and they grew up, that, you know, they were basically grown. I would say, I think I think Penny was either 18 or about to turn, like within a week and a half, 18, when I married Christy, my second wife. And then we started having children, and we had three more then. And it's having done this twice gives a perspective. And being older and having children, Frank, I think it's, you know, it's, I don't want to say it's better because it's not, but it's different because you know what to expect. And that's a big deal. Because that first time, any parent having a first child is having a child for the very first time. I mean, that sounds
right.
Circular. I get it. But a bit of a tautology. But it's true. You don't know what you don't know until you actually go and have a child. And I always tell my older daughter, and I joke with her all the time. I should say oldest, because I've got three. I tell her, you were the beta child, you know. So we had to learn how to be parents with you. Her and my mom, and with my second wife, our older son is her first.
Right.
It was
right.
Same sort of thing. He's also a bit of a beta child as well. So, but congratulations.
And every child is different too. Like, you know, with the first, and kind of like having gone through it now three times, or in the process of going through it, I guess. But one thing I noticed with the littlest guy is I know now that this time is short.
Yeah.
And I appreciate the little things. Not that I didn't with the older two, but it was when it's your first child, you don't know what to expect. You're like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. What am I doing? Right. A lot of imposter syndrome with the first kid. Yeah. And then with the second one, you think that, oh, we've done this before, it's no big deal. But you're thrown for a loop because it's a totally different type of personality.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to keep, if they're close enough in age, you have to keep them both alive, which becomes this whole thing. And then they interact with each other. And I'm an only child, so like this is completely like seeing the sibling relationships develop is completely foreign to me.
Right, right.
And my wife isn't. So she's like, you can't, like, I remember the first time I came back from a conference and I used to bring like either a souvenir or like a swag thing from the show. And I only got one. That was a mistake.
Right, right.
I can
imagine Roberta addressing that.
Yes, yes. My lovely wife was like, you can't do that. Like, oh. And even now with like the littlest one, I'm like, but he's a baby. He can't. She's like, it doesn't matter. It's like, okay.
Right.
So, but it's interesting to kind of see that. And it's cool to see my oldest kind of really grow into being a young man, but also growing into being a big brother twice right. over. And right. my middle child is kind of was used to being the baby of the family.
Yeah.
Now that's he's a big not. Jump. And well, I think he was excited that he was no longer the baby.
Okay.
But then he realized, wait, I'm no longer the baby. I lose. He knew all the bad things he would lose, but he don't think he realized the good things he would lose too. So it's kind of interesting. He's kind of developed into it really well too. So it's
yeah. Yeah.
It's worked out well. And the little guy is just, you know, the missing puzzle. My sister-in-law basically said, like, he's the missing puzzle piece you didn't know was missing.
Aw.
And he, like, really fits in really well. Like, and he's just, it's interesting to see the personalities develop and, like, interact with each other.
That is really cool. And I didn't say it before, but congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I've told you, you know. Yes.
But not
like, day of, I think, when we went to the courthouse.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You did say congratulations, but up until the moment, I swear, if you're still listening, we are going to talk about technology, but hold that thought. up until the moment the judge basically put the hammer down, literally, we were expecting certain parties to show up.
Yeah.
And stop the process. That's all I'll say.
Yeah.
Up to and including physical violence against me, the judge, or the building. So that's the kind of things I've been living with over the last.
Goodness, Frank. That's
like
hard.
What, year or so? Because we met him about a year, and we met him end of January last year. Okay. Because we didn't know he existed. He's about 18 months old now. So he's about 4 months before we even knew he existed. And we're like, and he was in the foster care system in Pennsylvania. Yeah. And we're like, you know, we just bought this big new house. We're just across the state line, more or less.
Right.
And then one day I will tell all about this, but I'm going to wait for certain parties to pass away. because as of yet, they haven't figured out how to sue you beyond the grave.
Not yet. With AI.
With AI, anything's possible. But now that we're back talking about AI, I think it's interesting because with my first child, I wasn't in the AI space, right? I was still in the Silverlight world, which kind of crazy to even say that out loud. with my second one, I was in the AI space, and I really got to appreciate, like fully appreciate, not just from like a parental level, but from a developmental psychology and kind of engineering aspect of a cognitive way, how language develops, how learning happens. And now I'm seeing the relationships build between the three separate nodes, if you will. And that's fascinating to see. And maybe not to anyone who's not an only child. If you're an only child, if you have siblings, you live through that experience.
Yeah.
I did not. So
well, it's fascinating. And to be fair, I'm the oldest of, there were five of us. You know, mom had five boys, and it's just as foreign to me to think about what it would be like to be an only child. So I really don't say one's better than the other, and I don't think that's what you're saying at all.
No, not at all.
But they are different.
Well, you know, it's funny. When I was a kid, a lot of people would say to me, like, "Oh, it must be terrible being an only child." I'm like, I don't know. I think it's pretty flipping awesome. And I didn't always say flipping, if you get my drift.
I do.
But where it did stop becoming awesome is about the age, I was about 25, when I realized that my parents were getting older.
Mm.
And I realized the consequence of that.
Yeah.
And I had that, I call it an uh-oh moment around age 25. Like, uh-oh.
Right.
It's on me. Like there's no one else.
Yeah.
Like, and I know from experience with other family members and things like that, even if there is a sibling, one sibling tends to take the brunt of the load for many reasons, legit, illegitimate, fair and unfair. Right.
Yeah.
So even then it's not a guarantee, but still there's someone who can understand your growing up circumstances in a way that really no one else can. I don't know. So
so
as a kid, it's an awesome ride. The second half of it, not so much.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a movie that starts off really good but then turns terrible. Can't really think of one, but you get the gist.
I do.
I mean, it's show 360, so we have to like kind of hit all our notes of like movie reference.
That's right.
You know,
we'll have to come up. We'll have a movie reference. I know us.
Maybe we'll have Bailey come up with one if we don't.
We will do it.
Speaking of Bailey, I'm doing an experiment. And this was an experiment inspired by some other happenings where the thought I had was, well, what if you had AIs delivering a short kind of newsy podcast about AI? And you said, you're like, dude, there's already YouTube channels that do this. I'm like, no, but they don't tell you they're an AI, right?
That's
so is
true.
That quasi?
Yeah.
So is it, so we now have a second AI entity, and her name is Jen. Jen
Get
AI.
Get it.
Right?
That's so clever.
And because now we can say, everyone's talking about Jen AI. So I did the first couple of rounds of experiments, and I passed the round to people that... I mean, we've gotten the feedback that Bailey is both an interesting aspect of the show, but also if she talks for too long, it becomes very obvious that it's an AI, right? So that's why, if you notice, that kind of, I try to keep her intros to a minute plus or minus like 5 seconds, right? Just because I get it. We do listen to the feedback. I do like keeping her because it's always cool to like have an intro of what the show is going to be about. Yep. Right. And you or me could do it, true, but they're about to hear us for like 35 to 40 to an hour. So it's to an hour. So I'm pretty sure it's nice to hear a different voice. So I actually found a new AI voice that sounds very human like, mm-hmm. and that's the voice for Gen AI. And then I was thinking the first iteration, the first recording, and it's on YouTube. We're going to start a separate podcast channel because at one point, if you go back into history long enough, I did do like a daily kind of show of news in AI or in data. Mm-hmm. But that was when I was unemployed in between jobs. And I had two kids.
And one of them wasn't a toddler.
One of them. Actually, at the time, one of them was, actually.
Oh, okay.
But the gist is that I also got the feedback is that if it starts polluting the feed, people will do that. And if you look at successful podcasters, I'll use Joe Rogan, right? Love him, hate him, admire him, loathe him, whatever. He has the main show, and those shows are anywhere from 2 to 3 hours. I think I saw one in the feed. It was 4 hours, which I can't imagine. But there's also a series of YouTube channels as well as I think a podcast RSS feed where it's called JRE clips, Joe Rogan Experience clips, which are just like segments, which is good because very few people are going to sit through the entire 2-3 hours.
Right.
In fact, when I was driving back and forth to Pittsburgh for the visitations with said child, that was when I started listening to it because it was like this one kind of narrative you could listen to on the drive. It's about 3 hours. Yeah. Right. So the problem is that because of language reasons, I realized I couldn't do it if there were kids in the car, which I think solidifies our statement of we try not to have profanity. And I think for the first time, we actually bleeped it out a couple of shows ago with Luke. I forget his last name, but Luke Diaz.
Yeah.
The venture capital guy. So, and there's another show by a very brilliant man named Benjamin. His first name's Ben. That there's a lot of profanity in that. So the effort to edit that out.
Yeah, that would be hard. And this may be a good segue.
This is an excellent segue. I was teeing it up.
Thank you, Frank.
Just not consciously.
thank you. We started another thing. We're always starting things. And we started recording on Teams, and we'll say things in the shows, like if you're watching this video, and we said it for the longest time, but we didn't have the videos posted anyway for people to see them. So a couple of 3 months ago, we found a platform that would work well, and it managed a lot of the stuff behind the scenes for managing subscriptions. So people want to sign up and watch shows indefinitely. That's available. And then if you get, you watch what's available out there and go, all right, I'm done. It's a long weekend and you binge watch all of the data-driven media TV parts. And that's what it's called. It's datadrivenmedia.tv. The link right now does not have an SSL on it. So if you go to http://datadrivenmedia.tv, it will redirect you to the official site that's kind of managed by the platform. And it does have an SSL on it. So when you sign up, your stuff's not at risk. Right now it's $4.99 a month is what we've got it set at. And we'll probably experiment with price because I know us, we do that. There's a first month for $3.99. You can sign up, try it out. Again, if you don't like it, you can cancel it at any time. And in addition to that, there's your first 7 days are free. So like almost every other subscription service, you sign up and you put in your credit card information. But then if you cancel, before the free part's done, then it doesn't cost you anything. So again, HTTP, not an S, /datadrivenmedia.tv. And to be fair, when Frank got the original domain, datadriven.tv, for the podcast, this was the thought back in 2017,
yeah.
Yeah, and the idea was to do video. And it turned out to be hard. It's probably the best way to say it. It was difficult and challenging. So we just launched with the audio part of it. And I'm still shocked that the audio has done as well as it does. The podcast has done as well. And that's really because of all of you. So if you're listening to the audio, if you wanted to go over and watch the video, see me and Frank, and kind of follow along the show. I was going to say the unedited version, but we do so little editing these days.
It's only like there's a couple of green room conversations you can kick out, catch up on. The security one is awesome. This Week in Security, is that what it is? Or the security guys?
Patrick,
the green room presentation, I would say, and that was a good show, was almost as good as the show.
So while we'll edit out the stuff before Frank begins the intro, we'll edit that out in the audio. That's included in the video.
Right.
And so the reason it was a good segue when we were talking about, potential profanity, which we and all of our guests have done a great job at limiting.
Right.
There was one show, very intelligent guy. I listened to the show, and I've been around enough people who use profanity and they're not angry when they do it. It's their way of speaking, that I can separate those two. Not everybody's like that. And I'm not judging. I'm just saying.
And if you knew me outside of a professional context, dude, I grew up in New York City and North Jersey.
What do I call it, Frank, when you start?
Go Jersey on you.
That's right. Frank goes Jersey every now and then.
So and that was kind of that. And this is a good example of like, we're doing a retrospective. That was my NPR voice. You and I had a big debate about this. I'm like, look, I get it. Like, I want to leave it in because we had a big debate. Like, I want to leave it in, right? Our podcasting platform, and apparently a lot of them now have a flag of this episode is explicit, right? But then we kind of went back and forth on that and basically what you said. And I was just like, and plus, I know that a lot of us listen to podcasts with little ears in the car, right? Yeah. And a big to say problem, like his problems go, it's pretty good. Like I would love to listen to the latest Joe Rogan when I was driving up to Pittsburgh, but how do I explain to my 9-year-old, like, yeah, you shouldn't use bad words. He goes, but Joe Rogan has made a $1 billion deal and he uses bad words. I was like, okay, so rather than have those awkward conversations, we decided to not publish it yet until I can get the time to bleep it through. And what's interesting is I actually used AI to find the profanity. Right. So
that
we have
was interesting.
I do listen to the whole show, but like if I'm editing, if I have my editing like mindset on, I need to do it quick. Right. And I tend to do it quick. So what I'll do is, I just ran it through. We use something called Cast Magic. And you know what? I'm going to go out there on a limb and say, I will provide a affiliate link. You should totally check out Cast Magic. It's freaking awesome. Because basically what it does, all the show notes since what maybe like 6 months to a year now have been done with Cast Magic. So Cast Magic will let you upload an audio and or video now, apparently. So and then it'll create a transcript. You identify the speakers, right? Because you're basically marking up. It'll identify when you're talking, when I'm talking.
Yep.
Right. But it'll also run a series of AI prompts against it. Like, here's the title for the show. Here's the key moment. So if you looked at the last maybe 15, 20 episodes, those key moments have been selected by AI. And if I don't like it, I can regenerate it, but it works out really well.
Yeah.
Because that is it's not labor intensive. That's not the right word. It's time intensive.
Yeah.
And I think if there's anything I've learned over the past, we'll say 5-6 years, is that time is the true currency.
It's
time
true.
Is the true measure of wealth. And it's the only thing that's ever really fairly distributed across life. Talent's not, looks are not, money is not.
Yeah.
And you name it, it's probably not evenly distributed. However, I learned this from a guy I used to work with at Microsoft, because he had this whole rant, and we were stuck in a car ride from, like, I say stuck like it's a bad thing, but we were stuck in an Uber ride from SeaTac to Redmond. And, you know, if you hit the traffic the wrong way, that's not a trivial drive. So for my peeps in the DC Beltway area, it's like going from Silver Spring to Tyson's Corner, rush hour, or any time of day, right? Could be 15 minutes, could be 3 hours. And if you hit the jackpot, could be 6 hours. Ask me how I know that one. Long story short, the topic of gaming came up because there's a bunch of nerds in the car. And this one guy had basically purchased might have been Star Wars Galaxy, one of the big massively online things, right? Which I don't play because I know it's a massive time sink and that will become my life. So it's just easier to avoid it. And so he was really into it. And he people were giving him the business. He bought a pre-made character at like level 60 or level 100, right? And people were like, you shouldn't have done that. You cheated, blah, 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 blah. And then he had this excellent stump speech on the value of time. And he's like, look, I have a life. I have kids. I think his twins were born. I don't know. I have a job. I have this. I have a career. I just want to play a game. And, you know, I don't mind trading money for time. Because, and then he went on this whole thing like, you know, I have the same number of hours in a day that Bill Gates has. Remember, all Microsoft nerds, right? So and this is before Elon was in the top billionaire list, right? I have the same number of hours a day that he does versus the beggar on the street versus anyone in the world. It's how I spend that money. And if you look at how Bill Gates spends his time or spends his money, it's really more to optimize his time. So what does that tell you? And I was like, whoa. Because when they were talking about the online game, it's a great point. And yeah. I'd love to get him on the show. I don't think he does AI, though. But he'd be an interesting character. But the interesting point, because during part of the conversation, again, it was a long drive. When I started talking about this particular online game, I kind of tuned it out because, well, I don't want to know how good it is, right? The less I know, the better. The further I am away from the event horizon, the better. So when he started talking about, you know, the time focus and things, I was like, wow, that's really good. I think that's a really good idea. And that kind of stuck with me. It's one of those things that kind of just lodges itself in a corner of your brain and you start thinking about it. So the short of it is that by using these AI tools, we can produce more content. And if you notice, we've been really good with that over the last, you know, few months of putting out a show weekly, or if not twice weekly, because we did a bonus show on Leap Day. Because I figured bonus day, bonus, whatever.
There we go. It's a great idea, but you're absolutely right. The impact that I'm seeing LLMs have these days is more in force multipliers, in time savings, and that sort of stuff. And I had my recent anecdote about that happened in the past couple of weeks, where I was responding to a request for a proposal. And I don't know if you've ever had an opportunity to look at RFPs. They vary. This one was relatively short for a project that was probably going to last more than a year. And, you know, and they were doing this very rigid process where you got the RFP, you had a couple of weeks to collect and send in the questions. And then the week after that, the proposal was due. You were going to send in your proposal. And you got one shot at the questions. And I was like, what? I'm sure I'm going to have more questions after I get these answers.
Right.
Can't do that. I'd like to sit down and talk to the people. Can't do that. It's like, I've got to communicate using this writing. So at the end of it, when I got all of my questions back, we're running out of time and I needed to, you know, to respond to the proposal. And I sat down with one of the engineers who would end up working with me for over a year, drafted a really quick, you know, like four sentences, copied and pasted that. And I used ChatGPT-4, and said, restate this, you know, so that it's not as terse. I didn't use this prompt, but in my mind, the first prompt I thought of was, you know, make it not seem like an engineer wrote it. Which, to be fair, I struggle with communicating with my wife, whom I love dearly, not like an engineer would respond to it. One of my mentors told me years ago, and it's like you were mentioned in the conversation, it stuck. His boss had told him to go do some sales stuff. And he bring an engineer and he said, I want you to talk to them like you're talking to your wife. And that was good advice, but that wouldn't work for me as well as it would for him, because he was better at communicating with his wife than I am. But the GPT did it. First pass, Frank. Me and the engineer looked at that and we said, copy and paste and send. And we ended up sending that. So
two things came to mind when you said that. One, I married an engineer. So fun fact, first engineer I dated, I ended up marrying. I don't know. Maybe there's causation correlation. But it would be unwise for me to do any more experimentation, right?
I would have to agree with that.
That's my attempted rim shot. The other thing is, I sent you this joke last night on YouTube Shorts, right?
I saw it.
An engineer goes to hell. This is the joke. It's really funny.
I think it's funny.
Engineer goes to hell. And the devil sees him, is like, what are you doing here? And he goes, I don't know. So he's like, it's too hot here. I'm gonna build an air conditioning system. So he builds an air conditioning system. Hell becomes cool again and livable, right? And he makes a bunch of other improvements because every time he sees something wrong. And God's talking to the devil and he goes, how's things down there? I bet it's hot. He goes, actually, no. And he's like, what do you mean? Oh, yeah, this guy came here. He's an engineer. He made all these improvements. And he's like, well, that's a mistake. He clearly shouldn't be there. He has to come to heaven. And he goes, no, you know, he goes, no, I'm keeping him. He goes, yeah, well, I'll sue you. And then the devil just looks at them and laughs and, where are you going to get a lawyer?
That's so mean.
I know. As someone who spent a good part of the last 15 months with lawyers.
I understand why you sent it to me. I got it.
I thought it was funny.
First I laughed, and then I was like, I know why Frank sent this.
Lawyers are good when they're on your side.
That's true. And you had a great lawyer.
Our lawyer was awesome. She was the best. Family law is a different animal, and I never had to encounter, but somebody once said it's the best way to get financially and emotionally drained in one fell swoop. And I could totally see it. Because there's like just this part of the, I don't know, man. It's just, if you can avoid it, highly recommend you do. I would give it a Yelp review of do not recommend, you know, 0 stars. But people don't go there typically by choice, I guess. But it's particularly when you're dealing with like the social welfare system, it's just dismal. Yeah. You know, we would be there in waiting rooms and there would be other kids there waiting to see, you know, their parents. It's just god awful is the only way I could say it. And meet our language requirements.
There we go. Yes.
But I forget how we got off topic. Oh yeah. So ChatGPT.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's totally great for like summarizing things.
It was less than 5 minutes, you know?
I mean, and it's just like, you were able to respond. I'm assuming you were able to respond to that.
I was. Yeah.
But I've also found that it's helpful to build out. So I signed up for Gemini when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And one of the example prompts they give you on the screen is, you know, act like you're, you know, a fictional character. I think it might have been somebody from like a Dickens novel or whatever. You know, start to be conversational and start talking about the weather. And I'm like, what if I made this a character from The Expanse? So Christian Alvarez-Varela, who I can't describe her, but she would not pass the language test. Let me put it that way.
She wouldn't, but she is an awesome character. Such awesome a well-written character. Her and Amos Burton.
Extremely. And
all of them, really. That whole series. I said this back when I read the first book, and there were maybe four out when I read the first one. I said, this is the best writing, hands down, not sci-fi. Right. Just the best writing I've read in about a decade.
Right. No, it's just really well written. Like
it is. Really, and read the books. The series is good. Don't get me wrong. I don't know how you understand a series without having read the books.
So I saw the series, then I read the books.
Oh, how did that go? That's great. So good use.
I will tell you that you can appreciate the fine details. Like there's one scene, and this is not a spoiler, right? So the Asteroid series, it's the first season and the first book starts off there. And there's this whole segment where Miller, who's like a detective, is basically complaining about the transit system and how it works. He's talking about the transit system, how it works, and or doesn't work, as the case may be. And he was describing the various lines and the various stops and things like that. And when I rewatched season one, they actually have in the subway car, well, not subway, but you get the idea, the trains, they actually have maps that match exactly his description, like from the book. So there's a whole lot of like set design and stuff that after reading the books, because there's always that one guy or gal that's like, the book's better. Like, oh, shut up. Right. That's it. That's like my internal voice.
I liked them both, Frank. And I read the books first.
But I saw the series first, and I didn't watch it till season three because it was on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Mm.
Or season two, because I just had no faith in the Sci-Fi Channel keeping good shows on the air for more than like 3 years. And I'm referring to Defiance. Defiance was a really good show that got canceled before its time. But where was I going? You tell me I had to watch it. And I was like, well, I'll watch it. You know, two seasons have been out. And if sci-fi cancels it, I at least have the books to kind of finish the story.
Right.
And I was just enthralled. So then I saw the first season, then I read season one, and I'm like, this is really good. Like, and then I rewatched season one, and I was like, it just adds more depth to it. So it's like, that's very rare that you have, people say the book is better than the movie, or the movie is better than the book, or TV show, whatever. But it's very rare that they both make each other better.
Yeah.
Like, and when they make decisions where they merge characters, it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Like, even if you don't agree, Alex, for instance, right? The character of Alex is removed from the show because of outside reasons, outside shenanigans he got himself into. But he's still in the book, which is interesting. So I was a bit salty I was relieved when Amazon took it over.
Mm.
Which is funny because the first thing they did was with Christian Alvarez-Varela's character. She curses like a sailor in the first Amazon season, like from like the first 5 minutes, which is kind of like, oh, they don't have to worry about that anymore. the other thing was apparently Jeff Bezos himself is a big fan of those books.
Mm.
So when Sci-Fi got the rights, I don't know if this is true, but the scuttlebutt on the interwebs, because everything on the internet is true, was he had a conniption. He had a fit. Like, how did they lose? How did they lose? So when Sci-Fi canceled it, they basically swooped in like almost right away.
Yeah.
Now, I am supremely disappointed that they chose not to continue the rest of the series.
Yeah.
But I remain hopeful because in the stories themselves, there's a time gap between a series of books. So maybe
there is. And where they stopped was a good spot to stop. It's the end of the first set.
The first
and
arc.
Then, yes, it jumps. What is it? It jumps at least 20 years.
I was it like may 18, 20 30. Years, something. Yeah, a long time.
It was a big jump. But and the thing about it is, if you read the books, I'm not trying to, and no spoilers, but if you read the books, you could almost start at that point because of the backfill that they wrote. It's again, right. It's the best reading I've read. It's in the top, I'd say it's in the top 10 easy, and maybe in the top 5. And I'm putting series in there because I love series, first off. But I'm putting series in there like The Lord of the Rings and The Chronicles of Narnia. And,
right,
you know, I'm a fan of the Longmire novels as well. So completely different genre. But, you know, they're very well written. And I like when I say multidimensional, that's what the word I was going to use. I like multidimensional. I'm not talking about necessarily space, because the Longmire novels, which are set, and you know, out in the West, the U.S.
Oh,
West.
Longmire. I think it's
Longmire. Sorry about minor. That. It's okay. Yeah, but it was a series about that as well. Same, they managed to do the same sort of thing. The different story, based on the same characters, and also well written. I watched this. I did what you did with Expanse. I watched the series first, and then started reading the novels. And I think the 20th novel in that series is coming out next month or the month after. Wow. But again, multidimensional in this way that it's definitely more than just one topic, I guess is the right way to say it. The plot involves more than just people. I don't know how to say that without but it's definitely a view into other cultures and stuff like that. So
interesting.
I think what they wrote, Ty and I can't even remember the other guy's name.
Ty Franks and S.A. Curry is how, Corey, right? James S.A. Corey.
Yeah, it's
their
really
pen name together.
Right. So, but it's two, and I think they wrote with Lucas.
They did.
And that shows. I believe that's where they came out of the Star Wars.
They were. I guess for somebody is going to shoot me hate mail for this, but I'll say it anyway. They were like gophers for George R. R. Martin.
Mm.
Right.
That may be what I was thinking of, but I thought I read that they were involved in that, but the whole,
they might have been.
So opera, we'll just say it that way, but then definitely a space opera where you have to create essentially a universe of characters and politics and history.
So I was doing some research on this. So one of, they were interviewed, and one of the origins was that where they were contracted to, we're back on MMOs again. They were contracted to write a backdrop and plot kind of structure for a MMO that was set like in the future and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So that might've been the motivation. Plus the fact that they had worked for George R. R. Martin. I don't know.
Double check that. I'm sure one of our listeners will dig in and correct us if we've misspoken.
And we love it when that happens.
Absolutely. That's
contrary to what
somebody's listening.
Well, when we started, I would joke like, well, at least my mom will listen.
I think one of the reasons we were going there is I was going to plug my, as of today, it's my latest post on andyleonard.blog, and it talks about how to use OpenAI's ability to create custom GPTs. And I just walk you through, I do that a lot. I do tutorials with screenshots and stuff. Granted, I wrote the post, I think, about 3 weeks ago, posted it a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and probably it's out of date already. That happens all the time.
Oh, especially here. Especially in the space, yeah.
But the character I created, I started with one of their suggestions, like you did with Gemini. And I said, create a code formatting, chat LLM. And they call them GPTs, custom GPTs. And have
that. I am going to share my screen and look at the blog post because we are on video. And some people will choose to watch this video.
That's true.
So here it is, AndyLeonard.blog.
And I had it use a character from The Expanse, Bobby Draper. One of my favorite characters. She's a Martian Marine, Martian Marine gunnery sergeant.
She's awesome.
She is very, very tough and a great character. But and I put a couple of quotes in there. She makes good suggestions as I go through this. But yeah, I named her Code Formatter Draper. Had GPT generate the image for me there of the keyboard.
Which I love the Martian motif too.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah,
that is cool.
And I think it generated more than one, and that was the one I just got to pick that one out of there. And yeah, threw some code in and had it do the formatting. So neat way to do that. Frank and I both have blogs. Mine's andyleonard.blog. Frank is way beyond. I cannot snatch the pebble from Frank's hand in blogging. Franksworld.com. 25 years old, Frank?
Well, the domain is started in 95, but the blog part of it, the tech blog part of it started in 2004. So that's 20 years. Although when I lived in Germany, I used a service called Blogger, which I don't even know if they're still around. But I had written a Perl script to scrape the RSS feed and then post it on the actual domain because I didn't want to give up my own domain ownership.
Now see, that brings us to another thing we wanted to talk about.
Oh, is this Dingo?
Frank's been automating blog posts, and he automated a whole lot of the activity that goes on behind putting a show, a data-driven.tv show episode out. And it made it so much easier. It was so easy, I could do it. But he had to write a lot of this from scratch when he started writing it. But what grew out of that was this project you called Dingo, and that's serving that up, Frank.
There you go.
Tell us about Dingo, Frank.
So we did talk about Dingo before because I was talking about open sourcing it. And yeah. I'm still, I haven't done it yet. And it's not because I've changed my mind. It's just because you open source something, you kind of have to do things the right way. And for me, now that I have three kids, I have to think about how can I best optimize the the career and monetary potential.
Speaking about time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're like 45 minutes ish, I think. So, but good call on that because we tried the Joe Rogan multi-hour thing a couple episodes back. We did an experiment. The views on that, the listens on that was pretty not Joe Rogan level. Let's put it that way.
They were off-putting, I think, when people clicked on it and saw the time bar.
Right,
show
and
up.
Really like,
yeah.
And it was like, you know what, that works out better too because to find contiguous 3-hour blocks or 2-hour blocks of time for the both of us plus a guest is nigh impossible. So you know what,
it's hard enough to do an hour.
I'm okay with the hour thing, the 45 minutes to I think if the conversation's right, I could justify going to 90 minutes, but beyond that I don't think there's any serious value. Agreed. Right, and calm down, the 90 minutes is going to be an outlier.
right
just because it's just because I don't know, like I just think that we have a sweet spot. We have it works.
Yeah.
So
you were working on this post here, the Glaze post.
Yes. So this was actually, so I gave a talk. I gave a couple talks on Tech Days Pakistan. I didn't go to Pakistan, I did it remotely. Then I did a live stream, and then I did, actually, I think I still have it up on the thing. And then, an internal lunch and learn brown bag session at Red Hat for a certain group. And then based on that, somebody said, have you heard about Glaze? And I had heard about something that basically, this is not the project I heard about, this is a second one, but Glaze is the idea is that it will interfere with the scraping and learning of an AI, I can't talk, of bots that sweep the internet looking for content to train Gen AI models on.
Gotcha.
And that is the, as of now, the latest post on franksworld.com.
Yeah.
But you could just look it up on Glaze. So somebody there sent me, this is interesting because this is the slide I gave the talk on because we're talking about this, right? And I'm not, you know, I also did a live stream on this on LinkedIn. Did I mention that already? It's time for a coffee reload. That's the other thing too with these multi-hour shows is that there's biology becomes a problem.
Right.
Caffeine intake becomes a problem. So the topic of this talk was basically the importance of open source and AI, right? And basically, like, we don't know what data was used to train it. And if you're watching this, you see the cute images I have that we don't know how it was trained. We don't know what the model does. And then I said, surely a foundation model owner will share this information openly and freely. And this is the pained look of expression from Mira Marathi, which I think is how you say it, or Myra. I've heard her called Myra too. Basically was asked by a Wall Street Journal reporter, hey, where'd you train your data for this? And she kind of, that's the face she made.
Yeah.
And she claimed to not know. And I call shenanigans on that because, or BS, depending on, because if you look at her resume on LinkedIn, she's been part of the Elon Musk cinematic universe.
Since, I like that.
the EMCU. She's been part of that world and like that level, and her education is appears to be top notch. Mm-hmm. She knows, like, she's been part of like Tesla when they were doing like the putting AI in Teslas, like in the early 2010s, which is way before it was cool. Right. So she has a long history of this. For her not to know, I find highly unlikely. Right. I find that unlikely. I think it was a uh-oh. Speaking of lawyers,
right.
But that was basically the gist.
You showed the earlier slide with the quote where Elon is suing OpenAI.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, part of it, I think before that suit, this is about something different. He's trying to get OpenAI to be open again.
Right.
And he had a hand in founding it. So I definitely get his point on that. But before that, there was... he was tweeting about, and this is November 2022, December, about how all of these people trying to compete with ChatGPT when it was released back then by scraping tweets, and they were trying to prevent that from happening, which sounds like what Glaze does now,
right?
Is ways of obfuscating it or at least increasing the difficulty. But it's a perpetual cycle with anybody who is going after information. And that now includes people trying to scrape the web to get data to train AIs. Before that, it was hackers. You know, and I don't think this is going away. I think there's just going to be yet another, another instance where people are trying to get to information for whatever reason. Right. I mean, this happened to me in 2008 or 2009. There was a company, and they aggregated technical blog posts and charged for the aggregation so people could subscribe, to the information.
I remember this. I remember now.
It was a bit of an exchange, I'll admit. And I ended up kind of going through two or three of them, and they were like, they said, you're making your information available publicly for free. And I said, I am. And they said, so why can't we create, summaries? They weren't copying it, but that also happened, copying and pasting the posts and putting them elsewhere. That was a different thing than this. And they're like, why can't we do this? And I said, for the same reason that others can't copy and paste their posts, put their name, I own this and I get to say. And if I wanted to create a newsletter and aggregate it and charge people, I don't know, $10 a month or something, then that would be different. But you didn't even ask. Right. And you do not have my permission to do that. And I don't want people to have to pay you for my content. That was my argument. Now, is it wrong or bad? I don't know. It's how I felt.
So, right. It's, and it's going to get real interesting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and there's a, What is interesting is we're recording this on the 21st of March, 2024. And either today or tomorrow, there's a case before the Supreme Court about the interaction between the federal government and the TLAs, the three-letter agencies, and social media.
Oh, yeah.
Circling around And you know, I think it started, it's been renamed, but it was Missouri versus Biden or Biden versus Missouri. It's been something renamed like that, into a different thing. And however you feel about that, you know, I'm not telling you, you know, feel one way or another, but it's definitely.
No, there are other places to do that.
It's crossing into the, I'll say this about it. It's crossing into this, kind of into this same thing about the AI and social media. You've got, of course, a common thing there with social media, but more than that, the impact of technology on culture.
Yes.
And a popular story that I've seen over the last 10 days or so has been accusations of suppressing certain information in search from a popular search engine. That's the accusation. I'll use the, you know, the official word, allegedly. I don't know. I really don't know. But I will say that it tends to go one way. There's definitely a cultural mindset that seems to be the victim, and another cultural mindset that seems to get a great big free pass. And that, while I don't expect equal coverage. I know the FCC did that for years. Fun fact, in the 80s, I worked at a television station.
Really?
I was an engineer, but it meant something different. But yeah, like when you watch the local news and the stories were running and all of that, I was the guy putting the tapes in the machines and queuing them up. And the director would push a button and it would take off. Yeah, it was a fun gig. But the FCC had this rule about equal time for politics specifically.
Right.
So, and it essentially meant that if you gave, let's just use Democrats and Republicans. I'm not trying to say that there's not more, there are, and it's getting really interesting. Seems like every presidential election cycle in the U.S., the independents, they've put up somebody more and more interesting and likely to garner more votes. But if you gave a Democrat 10 minutes to say, you know, their piece, you'd have to give a Republican 10 minutes to say their piece. That was the whole thing about equal time. And I think they're striving for that same sort of balance with popular search engines, with social media sites. And it's been interesting to watch that, kind of watch that argument. And it's because it's interesting to me because I enjoy and I'm involved and engaged in the culture. You know, I'm and so are you. Even if, and not you, Frank, but you are a listener. You are also engaged in our culture.
People are engaged by the culture by default. Like there's no opt out for that mailing list.
And that great, that's funny. The great philosopher Geddy Lee may have said it best: if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice.
That's true.
Yeah. So
that was Geddy Lee. I thought it was Snoopy.
Did Snoopy say that? Well, Geddy Lee wrote, it's in part of Free Will from the Spirit of the Radio in the Rush album back in the, that would have been in the 80s, I think.
I don't know.
Maybe then. Yeah, it would have been the 80s.
So yep, quick time check because we got off road a bit, which is good. This is what we did.
That's right? Crazy talk. We never do that.
Never do that. who was anyway, it? Was it Stu Miniman that said we should sponsor like an off-road racing team because we always go off track?
Somebody said that.
That'd be kind of cool, actually.
We
could
do that.
Since this is supposed to be a retrospective,
yes,
which I think we did. We've had a pretty good run of shows. Great run of guests. The guests are getting better because people are coming to us now, which is really cool. I don't want to pick a favorite show because that's hard to do.
No, I can't pick one.
But I will say I don't cringe every time I hear digital transformation.
Mm.
And I have our previous guest, Jennifer Swanson, to thank for that. It was, I think about customer success differently after talking to Luke Diaz.
That was, also, I just keep nodding my head, but all of them have been really good.
All of them are really good.
I mean,
I don't want to take one down or whatever, but we've had some great shows, even when it's just you and me like this. Like those are actually among the most popular, which
And the security guys, you mentioned that one earlier.
Oh my God, that show was wild.
That was just fun because we were just firing off of each other.
Right. We got to get them back and see if we'll let us on their show.
Dwayne and Patrick. Yeah.
But I mean 360 shows, seven seasons.
Wow.
We mentioned George R.R. Martin, and I know it's not necessarily his fault that season 8 of Game of Thrones is awful, but you know, we promise we will do a better job on season 8 than they did.
That's funny. See, I never watched the Game of Thrones, nor have I read the books.
Okay. I didn't get into it right away.
Yeah.
But I started watching around season 4.
Hmm.
And then I caught up, and there definitely is like a quality shift. Season 8 especially, because everybody was, you could tell everybody was done.
Mm.
The two guys, the showrunners, had just signed a deal with Lucasfilm to do a Star Wars thing. And I don't want to speak for them, but it looks like they were just phoning in the last season. And I don't know. Just
creative work. You got to be all in.
You got to love it, especially something like that where they go to these weird locations. They write, they have to, and if you're a showrunner, it's a bit of a thankless job because you're responsible for getting the show done. You're not really the director, so you're not directing actors. At least that's my understanding for the most part. You have to manage all the personalities and stuff like that. I don't know. It's like,
yeah.
But you could tell, like, if you're not all in, it shows. I think that's a very good way to put it.
Yeah. Well, I think I've said this before. I'll repeat it. We've got we've had a lot of views. We recently learned when people started coming to us with guests, we learned that there's a market out there where if you're interested in publicizing stuff, you can hire an agency and they will line you up with shows. They started calling us. This has probably been the last 3 seasons, maybe. We've had mostly that, if not more.
That's true.
And you had a conversation with one of the people from one of those agencies, year or so. And you were kind of asking,
It was December, because I remember, because it was...
Yeah, and you were like, why us?
I like to say I said it a little more.
I'm sure you said it better.
But for those that don't know, 2 of my 3 boys have birthdays in December. So December is basically the time of madness. and so she contacts me like literally on the eve of the time of madness. And, you know, because I had not been responding, because like the way it goes to my old email address, which I don't check, I've since changed. Which reminds me, I have a lot of follow-up to do in my spare time. That's part of the reason why, like, you know, we really need a virtual assistant, right? I mean, that's kind of like,
we're getting there. That's for sure.
Getting to that point, which is why we love what we do. We love serving the community, which is why we want to find ways to monetize this. Right. And, you know, I spend more at Starbucks every time I walk in the door. Than we would for what we're asking for the subscription thing. The point I was going, she was telling us that apparently on some rating sites, a couple of rating sites, we're like in the top 2.5%. Which I'm like, what?
We both had the same reaction. What?
I was like, where did you see that? She goes, on this rating service, you know, the industry uses. I'm like, can you send me a link to that? Because I have to see it to believe. But turns out 2.5%.
Yeah.
And then when I kind of went through the numbers and I kind of went through like this, it's like, it's not impossible, right? Because, you know, one, I'm very flattered, but 2, I'm trying to be humble, but what's that song? It's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way.
That's Matt Davis from the 1970s.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good game.
When I kind of ran the numbers, like, you know, it's plausible and it's believable, right?
Yeah,
I mean, they say it, they have their metrics. I was reading through their whole they have a whole how justification, they rank us. How they rank stuff. And yeah. I was like, that is cool. That is cool. So we're looking at ways shocked. To kind of expand on that, right? And grow. Like, yeah. you know, I want to be in the top 1%. Like, why not? Yeah. Right. I mean,
heck yeah.
Heck, we shouldn't have made it this far. So let's see how far this thing can go. And also too, I think something you said early on in this recording was this originally was going to be a video, right?
Yeah.
This originally was going to be a video podcast, but the logistics at the time were a lot harder. The technology, yeah. the ability to do a live stream from your browser was not a thing in mm-hmm. 2016, 2017. And we were really struggling with logistics. And then finally you said, let's just launch, which I think is one of the smartest things you ever said or did. And two, I think a lesson for life, right? I was being a perfectionist, waiting for things to be perfect before we did something.
Well, it wasn't without merit. It was a good idea.
Right, right, right. And it still is a good idea. I mean, we still yeah. chase after. We're still doing it now.
Sure.
And then when we finally, you know, I think that I'm glad we launched because that's created a certain amount of momentum.
Sure.
That if we not done that, we wouldn't, I don't know if we ever would have launched because we'd still be working on figuring out the video.
Well, and you know, Frank, you've had this happen. I've had this happen. If whenever I go to an in-person event now, yep. inevitably someone comes up and says, you know, it shares an opinion about the podcast. Almost always it's positive. But a few times when it hasn't been positive, it's been, why don't you think about doing this and why don't you do it that way? And it gives an opportunity to exchange. Most of the time, I'm able to explain to the person, like, yeah, we tried that, or we can't, or, you mm-hmm. know, here's the obstacles to that. But I'd say probably slightly less than half that time, I come back with an idea and say, hey, this person brought this up. It's like, I've been thinking about it. It's like, not a bad thought. You know, maybe
yeah,
we
yeah, yeah.
Cut
no,
that
we love
in.
Feedback. We love
yes.
feedback.
Yes. It's never like, oh, somebody said we weren't doing things right. And right, I'm so right. angry. That's never our reaction. Our reaction is like, yeah, okay.
Cool.
Anyway, thank you all for hanging in here with us. Yes, we're way over time. We just talked about how long shows don't do well.
We're not that bad.
I am honored to work with you, Frank, on this. And I think.
Ditto, man. That's all of our other projects that. Are in various yeah. states of conceptualization.
They're floating around here, but I can't think of anybody that I'd rather do this kind of work with. And we're very complimentary.
Right back at you, man.
Well, thank you, brother. And we think differently about stuff. And it shows. And it's like, I'm trying to remember the old flywheel thing. I think it was from a Collins book about the flywheel concept. Good to great, maybe.
Yeah, it was from good to great. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it's that just keeps going. And we've really got, people don't know this, we've got almost 20 years. We're coming out, it'll be 19 years this fall since we met. And we got about 20 years of that. And the podcast is just one of the things. It was November. It was like mid-November, first week of November 2005. We met at the Richmond.net users group.
I think the amount of coffee and water I drink is really going to be the limiting factor for how long these shows can do.
Excellent, Frank.
All right, man. Have a good one. Andy, everyone out there, thank you very much. And we look forward to serving you with entertaining guests and knowledgeable stuff. I need to work on that.
That'll work.
Maybe ChatGPT can. Maybe Bobby Draper can help me with that.
She could.
Could not use. So. Creating these personas of fictional characters is actually pretty cool because you can interact with them. Like, again, I don't want to extend this show any longer, but
yeah.
I might do a live stream later today. I'm like triple booked half the day, so
yeah. You've got some really cool ones. Your custom GPTs
yes,
are
I have like
cool.
about a half a dozen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool,
Maybe
man.
Maybe we should do a show about them.
That'd be awesome.
Cool, man.
We speaking of Bailey, before I hand it off to Bailey. Bailey is one of them. I created a custom GPT, so chances are the stuff that Bailey is about to say was generated by AI, which is fitting because she's AI. So
there you go.
I think it goes full circle. All right. Thanks, everyone. And Bailey, take us home.
And there we have it, dear listeners, the end of our 360-degree expedition. You've been riding shotgun with Frank and Andy as they navigated the highways and byways of data-driven discussions, with a generous sprinkle of delightful digressions along the way. It's been quite the journey, a full circle, returning us right back to where we started, but richer for the experience. We hope you've enjoyed this retrospective romp through the past 7 seasons as much as we've enjoyed presenting it to you. Perhaps you've laughed, learned something new, or maybe even both. That's always the goal here at Data Driven. Before we sign off, remember to like, subscribe, and ring that bell or do whatever it is you do to keep this digital dialogue alive and kicking. Your engagement keeps the gears turning and the data flowing. From the depths of our digital hearts, Frank, Andy, and I, your humble, semi-sentient host Bailey, thank you for joining us. Until next time, keep questioning, keep exploring, and, above all, stay data-driven.